Welcome back to Film Posers, for Boricuas ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, we'll be talking about what we watched recently in the month of August and some, like, the beginnings of September before TIFF took over our lives. And your moderator will be me. Me, myself, and I. Gabriela Huicos.
I appreciate your joke.
Thank you. August and September have been pretty hectic months for us posers, but we have survived and we watched some really great stuff, and we are just gonna talk about it. And if there's anything that you are thinking of watching on this list, then feel free to do so and let us know your opinions. And yeah, let's just jump into it. Okay, posters, who wants to go first? Who wants to show us their recently watched? Josie volunteers as tribute. We have our tribute.
Yes. Okay, so the reason I wanted to go first is because, well, the first film I will be talking about is Vivo, directed by Kirk D'Amico, and that is perfect and absolutely perfect because by the time you're listening to this, we are in Latinx Heritage Month, Latina Heritage Woo! Month.
It's our month. It is si. Our month.
And we actually are very happy to announce that we were featured on Elle Magazine to give our top 40 best and most recommended films, Latinx films, to watch year-round. And Vivo did make the cut. So, a little bit about Vivo.
Hey, look, also, Ma, we made it.
Also, go read the article.
Yes. We'll post it everywhere. Back to Vivo. It is posted everywhere.
No, back to Vivo. So basically, simple pitch. A music-loving kinkajou named Vivo embarks on the journey of a lifetime to fulfill his destiny and deliver a love song for an old friend. This film broke me. And I know I say that a lot, but my gosh. It is full of emotion, music, culture. Again, it's so culturally specific and it's so lovely. And I really enjoyed the songs. Some of them are a bit hit or misses depending on your humor. I enjoyed all of them, but there are a few that don't hit with everybody. I will say second act is the least strong of the three, but it's a very enjoyable film. And I do believe we all enjoyed it.
Absolutely, and the Vivo soundtrack has been the soundtrack that Josie and I have been playing the most. Yeah, we have a full review on Vivo on our YouTube channel if you're interested to hear more of our in-depth thoughts. But yeah, I absolutely loved Vivo. It's such a beautiful film. And the music, to me, I really liked every single song on the soundtrack, like Josie said. But yeah, I agree that some of them might be hit or miss. But I did love all the songs, and I just thought it was a really beautiful film.
Yeah, I just want to say that Vivo is just such a simple yet enjoyable film that just celebrates Cuban culture. The soundtrack is very energetic, and it does match the animation of the film, and also the croquetas.
La croqueta. Viva las croquetas.
Croquetas, yeah. Y los mangos.
Sí.
Also, the way they insulted Florida, just wow.
Florida. But yeah, definitely, if you want to hear more of our thoughts, head on over to our YouTube channel where we did a full review on the film. So, my next film is also animated and also Sony, because Sony Animation came for my heart and my tears this year. I'm so mad, but also so grateful. And the next film I'm going to be talking about is Wish Dragon. So, essentially, determined teen Din is longing to reconnect with his childhood best friend when he meets a wish-granting dragon who shows him the magic of possibilities. So, out of the three Sony Pictures animation films that came out this year, Duffy Mitchell's Versus the Machines is up there, Vivo is a close second, and then Wish Dragon will be my third place contender. Again, I think we've discussed this in the podcast, but if you haven't heard it, we are definitely pushing for Mitchell's Versus the Machines for an Oscar nomination for Best Animated Feature, because I think we can all agree that it does deserve it considering the attention it got online and all of the above.
I think they can all be nominated.
Yeah, Wish Dragon was enjoyable, but it is not their strongest. I will say, it kind of teetered there for me a couple of times because sometimes compared to the other two, it did go a little bit too childish at moments, but then it balanced it out with the more tender and soft-hearted moments, as well as, of course, the themes and the message that it tries to send is really good. My review essentially on Letterboxd was 1 hour, 22 minutes, and 13 seconds really killed me. If you know, you know.
Jesus, that moment, Josie. I just got cured from it.
I know. I gave the film 4 stars. I was gonna give it less, but I gave it 4 stars because of that moment, because I really think that it saved the film. It made it a lot more, it solidified the film. It really drove home everything so splendidly. Like the visuals, the animation, everything was just nice.
The color palette.
The color palette is beautiful. Amazing. Yeah. No, I think this is a must watch.
Absolutely. And it's on Netflix. And if you haven't seen it and you love animation, I don't know what you're doing with your life, but you should check this out. It's like a salt. It's a 99-minute film. It's a little after that 90-minute sweet spot, but trust me, it's great. I gave it 4.5 out of 5 because I cried and I loved it.
I cried too. Literally 1 hour, 22 minutes, and 13 seconds.
I'm going to get the depression again, Josie.
It's all about sacrifice, honey. Watch it, please. It's on Netflix. It is well deserving of your time. Now, this is this is a true parkour move.
Oh, I know what's coming.
We're going to be talking about Green Room,
aye.
Which we have mentioned on the podcast before, but I finally got to watch it, and I think I'm the only other poser other than Anna that has seen it. We mentioned it a while back in our A24, The Craft, talking about horror films, and yes. Wow. Literally my Letterboxd review is, what? So this film is from 2015. I gave it 4 stars. I surprisingly enjoyed it. And the more time passes, the more I think about it. Especially there's one line in the end that just stays with you in a haunting way, because it's just such a strong line. I can see how people might not like this, but I do think there's a lot to take out of here. Especially I really enjoyed the production design. I enjoyed the way they built up tension. I really enjoyed the character dynamics between the main group, and I do know that it does get old really quick. But if you vibe with this film, it will vibe with you.
So when I first watched Green Room, I saw the trailer, and the trailer was like, oh wow, this looks interesting. But it feels like one of those cases where the trailer sells you something that it isn't.
Okay, I never saw the trailer. I went in blind. Okay.
And it just feels that they did establish like a certain aesthetic, but at the same time, it just wasn't used, like full-blown used well, in a sense. And like you said, the story certainly does get old, especially throughout the third act. For me, the most interesting part of the whole film was when they were stuck in the room. And they were trying to figure out how they were going to go out. And certainly, like, the action scenes that they had, the gore, I thought it was very entertaining. But other than that, there's nothing else to say. Like, I didn't like the characters.
Yeah, I don't think they were supposed to be likable. Except for that one guy.
Oh, yeah. But at the same time, there's no... No encuentro un desarrollo de sus personajes. ¿Dónde está?
Yeah, it was just, again, it was just that one guy. He was the only one that was supposed to have a tangible growth. Mm-hmm. And again, they're just a bunch of people on the road that really have nothing going for them specifically. So I just really like how it paid off a lot of things set up at the beginning. And I like how it does come full circle in the dialogue. I think it's mostly the dialogue for me. Okay. And just the whole way it treats the House of Horrors trope.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the violence was kind of groovy. No sé, me sorprendió un montón porque it was impactful, but it wasn't overwhelming. Excepto, había un momento, especialmente when they put the tape on with the sticky part. Like when you could have done the other way and just wrapped it. Después, al final, como que el sticky part, usarlo para sellar. They just, this, no. This dude had a gashed, slashed wound on his arm. Y le pusieron fucking tape, industrial tape. That you use to like fix a car, like cuando ponen tape en el motor. That was a wound. Anyways.
Yeah. Right. Pure sticky tape. Okay.
This is not big smart energy. This is big dumb energy. But I enjoyed it. Now we're gonna be doing another park hour moment and we're gonna jump into he's all that. Which yes. I wasn't gonna watch, but Gabriela was like, let's watch it. So we did. And it's directed by Mark Waters, 91 minutes after being humiliated online, an influencer decides to get back at her now ex by taking a dare to turn the school's biggest loser into a prom king. I gave this 1.5 stars. Yeah. I surprisingly enjoyed it. Not for what it is or from true, let's just say, vibing. It could have been way worse. I wish they had gotten a better actor to portray the protagonist, because Addison Rae's acting definitely felt very one note. But I do think that she tried her best and she fit
was playing herself.
Yeah, that's why. I was impressed by Tanner Buchanan.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, I really enjoyed what he brought to the character, and he was the one that had me invested the most. I will say, I really enjoy the 90s classic.
She's all that.
She's all that. The film.
No, I can't. Like, I know that she's all that. Like, when you, it's the same plot as He's All That. So it's not the greatest thing out there, but it sticks the landing. It manages to get you invested. And I think it could have been mostly because it was a product of its time. But there are people that are vibing with this. So maybe there is, like, the formula does work. It just depends on how you manage it. And acting definitely plays a big part in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I gave it a... I thought I was gonna dislike it a lot more. But I think that after you sit through the entire Kissing Booth trilogy, you develop... You know, you realize what truly is bad in this world. And, yeah, I... You know, it was an okay movie. I think the weakness of it is just the acting. Like Josie said, it's very one note. It's really nothing remarkable. It's not deep or anything.
Yeah, it tried to be deep, but it really didn't bring anything new. It echoed the same themes from the first one, but just to adapt it to this day and age. But essentially, I remember someone that I saw, I watched the review, creo que fue Monica Gobaira, Cine Monica on YouTube. That basically, it was mostly like, it felt like a typical Disney Channel original movie. Like the most recent ones, not the OGs, which, shameless plug, we did an episode on that. So head on over and listen to that. But the most recent ones, it definitely felt more shallow. And it's ironic considering it's a film about being able to like someone for who they are underneath and not for what they look at or look like or what they put out in the world for others to see.
Yeah, so I gave this 2 stars. I definitely think I'm the poser who enjoyed it the most because I know it's bad, but I'm also like... I mean,
it's not Cinderella.
I haven't seen that for a reason. Yes, okay, I'm a Fifth Harmony stan, so you can imagine how scared I am. And
I can't believe I sat for Cinderella first.
Yeah, same. So, you know, He's All That. You know, the director has given us 2 of the most iconic teen comedies produced, known as Mean Girls and Freaky Friday. And you know that I'm a teen comedy fan, stan maybe. So, you know, it hurt for me to watch this in certain parts. I do agree with Josie that Addison Rae was not her. I can see how she did her best. But also, I thought of an interesting way to look at this, which was she was miscast. And hear me out. If you would have switched Madison Pettis's Alden with Addison Rae's Paget, which you're a scriptwriter and the first name you come up with is Paget. Really? Out of all the female names? Out of all the female names you can pick, you pick that? Like, choices. But anyway, if you were to switch Madison Pettis and Addison Rae, have them switch roles, I actually think it would have worked better. Because Madison Pettis, she did great in her role, in my opinion. But I do see Addison Rae more in, like, the villain type role. And since a lot of people don't like her, I definitely think they would have probably been, like, giving her a pass more than in the lead, where she's expected to carry more because of her clout.
I definitely think they would have been able to handle those roles if they had been switched.
Yeah, it could fit more. Although I still think the name Paget is terrible. Kourtney Kardashian. We need to talk about Kourtney Kardashian.
Jessica Miles Torres. They made her a Latina. We're in Latinx Heritage Month, people.
And it just always felt like she was just reading her lines.
I was going to say that. She was on her Peloton the entire time. I just know that they found a way to visually affix the script out of the Peloton because she was just reading it off her Peloton. And even if she was reading it, she was so wooden. And she was like, Snot is not our brand right now. And I'm here like, you know what? I saw a video review from drag queens who like to watch on Netflix on YouTube, Trixie and Katya, who said it best. What I would have done, gone to Mucinex and said, hey, I think we can make this work. And that's how you twist a PR scandal. I just think it's rude as someone who has seen the original, like the original. Look at the original's cast. You had Matthew Lillard, underused in this film.
He stole the show. His scene was 5 minutes long and he was the best part.
Yeah, but he was like, also, so underused. I would have liked to see him more. Rachel Lee Cook, who is the mom, but yet you have zero connection to as if that's...
Except at the end when they play the song Kiss Me and she's like, why do I know this song? Yeah. That was the best line in the entire movie.
And that's okay. That has a terrible script. And Freddie Prinze Jr. wasn't there. You had Kieran Culkin. You had a lot of good names and she's all that. And then you don't think to bring some of them back for this film? Like, maybe they couldn't, but... If you wanted to make this work, I think connecting the films maybe would have worked.
Yeah, I think it can be summarized as an unsurprising disappointment. But,
which I'll probably rewatch.
But it is also surprisingly passable. And that's He's All That in a nutshell.
But I will never forgive them for butchering the national anthem known as Teenage Dream by Katy Perry. And that's the last I'll say about it.
Ay, Dios mío. Anyways, my next film. My final film is actually a good one. Let's have a palate cleanser, everybody, shall we?
Yes!
Real Women Have Curves from 2002, directed by Patricia Cardoso. And it is 86 minutes long, and it follows a freshly graduated from high school, Anna, who receives a full scholarship to Columbia University. Her very traditional old world parents feel that now is the time for Anna to help provide for her family instead, not the time for college. So she essentially makes a deal with her mother that she will help her mother and her sister at the factory that they work. It's just such a beautiful film, especially because there's an entire scene where it's just all these women, like, in their underwear and their bras, just celebrating their cellulite, their stretch marks, sus panzas, sus muslos, and it was just so beautiful, and I can't believe not enough people talk about this as much. I also found out about this film because of Cine Monica, Monica Goaira, because she compared it to Lady Bird, but for Latinas, and of course, Say Less. So I watched it, and it has quickly become one of my favorite films, mostly because, again, that representation, but also Mirga Ferreira is just such a good actress, and also Lupe Ontiveros, and just seeing them interact, even though her character is the mom, Carmen Garcia, I couldn't. It's very different from Lady Bird. You actually, like, it's very difficult to make peace because there is a sort of emotional abuse that comes with it, but it's mostly because of a duty as the matriarch of a family. And there's just a lot, also the internalized misogyny that a lot of us deal with when it comes to our elders. And there are just so many layers to this film. But I think just to close it off, my favorite part was that Anna is able to explore so many facets of coming of age, like liking a guy and going on dates and applying to college behind her parents' backs without facing horrible repercussions. Because usually you would think that for a young Latina, for example, she is with this guy, so you expect it to end badly, like maybe he'll make fun of her or leave her for someone else or something like that. Like usually how it happens, like kind of like, how would you say, ay, como una un cuento para espantar a la gente. But no, like the guy generally likes her, like nothing bad happens, and she doesn't face horrible repercussions for going against her parents, because like the reality is that her mother is just being unreasonably strict. So it was just nice, especially the ending is very touching and it just made me cry. So watch it.
Noted. And you can also read more about this film in our L article.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy. I passed the mic.
Take a shot. Take a shot every time we mention the L article.
Ow. Yes. And now I pass the microphone to whoever wants to talk about what they watched.
The first film I'm going to talk about is a film called Till Death, directed by S.K. Dale. And this stars Megan Fox, who I may or may not be a stan of. I don't know if you've seen my Twitter. All depends. So, after a romantic evening at their secluded lake house, a woman wakes up handcuffed to her dead husband. Trapped and isolated in the dead of winter, she must fight off hired killers to escape her late spouse's twisted plan. Okay, I know a lot of people will probably compare this to Gerald's Game, but this is better. One. Two. The Megan Fox Killing Men cinematic universe is alive. It is well. I love this film. I own this film. Thank you, Best Buy, for bringing it. It was a lot of fun. It gave me exactly what I asked for. Megan Fox killing men. Megan Fox looking amazing. Megan Fox outsmarting men. And of course, it's that sweet spot Josie talks about of 90 minutes. It is right there. 89. It's a good for her film. Megan Fox's character, I will mention, does suffer abuse and trauma from the past. So a trigger warning, just in case. But overall, I really enjoy the film. I know there are people who won't like the film. Could never be me. I would highly recommend this whenever it's on streaming. So the next film I'm going to be talking about. Yeah, we started off great with Megan Fox. Next up, I was lucky enough to go see this next film in an IMAX theater. And it is called If I Can't Have Love, I Want Power. Yes, this is the visual companion to Halsey's newest album. It's an hour-long film experience set to the music of Halsey's album. It introduces a young pregnant queen who's named Lila, as she wrestles with the manipulative chokehold of love to ultimately discover that the ability to create life and end it unlocks the paranormal power within her. So, I'm going to talk about my experience first. My experience with this film was, first of all, I did go alone. That was the one part where I started to miss Josie, because I'm here like, damn, Josie and I could have gone to see this in one theater.
Honestly.
We would have vibed, because honestly, we would have been the only people in the audience who knew the words, because I saw a lot of people who were not,
I already
vibing.
Knew that, like 1 hour in after that album dropped, and I already knew the words.
Exactly. Because we follow the assignment. We understand it. And I had a bomb outfit, not gonna lie. It was great. First of all, an IMAX screening, one night only. The songs in IMAX go even harder than you would think. Hearing The Lighthouse on an IMAX screen, chef's kiss. It was beautiful. Now, the movie only featured 8, more or less, of her songs. Off the top of my head, The Tradition, Bells of Santa Fe, Easier Than Lying, Lilith. I can't remember the movie that much. But it gave me A24 vibes, which I appreciated. The cinematography was spectacular. I saw some influence from Marie Antoinette 2006, which was great. You know, which self-promo we did talk about in one of our recent episodes from last season, which you should definitely go check out. Story-wise, this is my main critique. I wasn't 100% clear some of the things that happened. I do think it could have been like tidied up a little bit, just needed some rearranging to make it work. But overall, I still had a great time. The IMAX screen made it so much better. My only other critique with this film is I wish it would have been done for not just one night. I think the one night was great for selling it out, but I would have liked to have seen a repeat screening because I know people who wanted to see this and were not able to. So maybe a lot down the line, it becomes available on like some sort of digital streamer or something like that. But honestly, great time. It was a good for her moment and you can't really lose there. So the next one I'm going to talk about, all four posers have seen this film, but we need to talk about it. And it is Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Marvel.
Making waves at the box office. Shang-Chi doing what it needs to do. So, Shang-Chi, for those of you who do not know and have not seen it, even though you should, Shang-Chi must confront the past he thought he left behind when he is drawn into the web of the mysterious Ten Rings organization. Right off the bat. Love this film. Have seen it twice. By the time this episode airs, I may have gone to a third screening. Who's to say? I think it's one of the best origin films Marvel has produced. It is my top film so far of 2021, and I will not apologize for it. It's the kind of film that audiences ran to the theaters before the pandemic. I think it's full of heart, action, laughs. And now that we've all seen it, can we talk about the scene between
wait. Spoilers. Spoiler alert for those listening.
But the scene is between Tony Leung and
Chef's Kiss.
Yep. You know where I'm going with this. And Fala Chen. Yes. Tony Leung and Fala Chen. Shang-Chi's parents. The craft, the cinematography, the movement.
Can we just remember that the same stunt choreographer from Kingsman did the choreography for Shang-Chi?
More proof that Kingsman won the battle against John Wick. Stop!
Unfortunately, the person has just passed away, and at the end of the film, during the credits, they do dedicate the film to him. Yes. So, beautiful choreography. I absolutely love that beginning, and that's how you knew that you were in for a good time. But I also remember, I might cut this out, who knows, but I remember just we were watching it and I just lean over to Gabriela and I go, these two, they gon' fuck.
Oh yeah. It was that energy, just saying they're gonna fuck, and then me the entire movie, every time Tony Leung was on screen, I was like, that's hot.
I mean, I like how he finally is getting recognized in Hollywood because he's already big. But this is
China.
But this is a really great introduction to him. So we're probably gonna see more of him in the future.
Absolutely.
I hope so. He's hot.
He is.
But also, he's like a really good actor. He's a great actor. Also. You know, I went into Shang-Chi not knowing what to expect. I really hadn't seen trailers or anything, so it was like I went in completely blind, and I loved it. I do agree. I think it's like top tier origin story from Marvel.
Yep.
It was so well done. The lore was so well explained. The cast was great. Like, it's truly a really great film. The fight scenes, everything about it is great.
Yeah. The film, it looked like the cast really had a fun time.
Every time he's on screen, me play, what a man, what a man, what a man, what a mighty man.
No, quite la canción de Doja Cat, woman, let me be your woman.
Woman.
Also, like, I just want to say that Wenwu is like one of the best Marvel villains. hands down.
You go.
Yeah.
It's one of the things how I love in Black Panther.
Exactly. It's like how he gradually got to that point. That's what I loved about his progression as a villain. We got to see why he got there. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it wasn't like some outlandish reason. He was a man who lost his wife and wanted to bring her back. He was a man in love.
And that if you have not seen it, get on to it, because you need to be part of it. You need to see it. And he's going to be an important part of the MCU. That's where I'm going to leave it off and move on to my next pick, which is not a film, but it's something we need to talk about. And it is the 2021 MTV Video Music Awards. Now listen, I've had many problems with this. One of them being, I don't know if the posers know. I think Josie knows more or less. But there was a big issue with with MTV and announcing Normani as a performer. Normani was expected to be a performer for sure before the show even started confirming artists. And they never really got to her till the last minute. Which, one, is wrong when she delivered one of the most iconic VMA performances in recent memory with Motivation, her first single. Second, her fans really went all out with the hashtags. They got her trending. They really were trying to get MTV to be like, listen, put her on the show. There are a bunch of other people you got that some don't want to see. But you don't have her who can really steal the show. She's done it time and time again. So I'm glad it ended up working out. Here's going to be my quick overall thoughts. Performances you need to see. Olivia Rodrigo's Good For You, I thought was good. I love Normani's performance of Wildside and her Janet Jackson tribute. Fantastic. She did the choreography from the music video. It was fantastic. I just loved it. Absolutely loved it. Chloe from Chloe and Halle performed her debut single, Have Mercy. Excelente Servicio, 10 out of 10 for her first solo performance. And Lil Nas X, his performance of Industry Baby and Call Me By Your Name. Show-stopping. He's amazing. His album comes out by the time this episode is up, and I will be streaming that. And the other thing we have to talk about, Justin Bieber winning Artist of the Year. Against, here are the nominees for the posers to refresh the memory. Ariana Grande, Doja Cat, Megan Thee Stallion, Olivia Rodrigo, and Taylor Swift. Four women who I feel had a much bigger and much better year than Bieber has.
Hello, my name is Josie Melendez, and I used to be a Belieber.
Hi, Josie.
Gracias. You got the joke. Either way, I haven't been following him for a while, and I will say, even though I did like Peaches because his most recent album was better than whatever the heck came before that. And no, don't correct me, Juan. We do not say the name. We don't want it to be acknowledged.
Never heard of it.
Muy bien. The previous album we do not acknowledge. Exactly. So the most recent album, it does have its bops. It feels more like he's going back to his original roots and feeling more comfortable with his music again. Though I will say, literally, why? I saw it on Twitter and I was like, that's fake. And now you're saying it, and I'm like, how is he, how? And again, this isn't a movie, so let's keep this short. But so many more deserving women in that category, and you really gave it to this dude.
Yeah, that's really my big complaint with the award show. I feel certain categories, I can understand why certain people won.
Not the white man. A white man? No!
But exactly. Love that meme. But between Artist of the Year and the controversy with Best Latin, I was okay with the VMAs. And if you don't know what the controversy with Best Latin is, long story short, you had in this category Maluma, Karol G, J Balvin, Dua Lipa, and Bad Bunny and Tiny song, Black Eyed Peas with Shakira song, Bad Bunny and J Cortez for Dakiti, and the winner was Billie Eilish and Rosalia.
I'm sorry.
For Lo Vas a Olvidar.
They don't even go here.
They don't even go here. And I do understand, because some people will argue, oh, because the history of the best Latin categories is usually because of the language and yes, the origin, not exactly being Latino or Latinx or Latine. That is not the origin of the category as far as I know and as far as I've seen. because I mean, you've had people like Enrique Iglesias winning for a bunch of years.
Yep.
But I think that considering the how the tide is shifting and how we are talking about this horrible interchangeability, and if that's not a word, call me Shakespeare. I'm inventing my own stuff. being able to interchange people from Spain with Latinas is very dangerous, and it is erasure of the history of Latinos, Latinas, Latinas, etc. And being like rewarding people that are not Latino in these categories is erasure. Despite that origin, I think it's time for a change, because that is violent. That is violent against the community.
I agree.
Especially when you have Dakiti in that freaking category. It's like, Anciana's a boss.
I spent so many of my votes voting for Dakiti, and I was so pissed when I didn't win. I was so upset. I really thought it was locked.
Boy drops a song that it became trending on TikTok and wins an award.
I mean, that's the thing. I think that song was good, and it is actually a genuine hit. But it dropped at like the end of the year. There is zero impact compared to the impact that all these other women had throughout the year. Like, you had Taylor Swift with having the entire internet in a freaking chokehold. Then you had Olivia Rodrigo moving her to the side and taking over for her chokehold so Taylor Swift could like rest her arm. And then you have Megan Thee Stallion freaking creating just a cultural renaissance, and I'm upset.
Yeah, they really moved the needle in terms of how great this year can be for music, and they really pushed themselves. They really showed more range. I mean, Olivia Rodrigo is so far having the best 2021 with her debut album. She is looking like a great, great nominee for the Grammys. But Justin Bieber wins. And you know what? Always remember, film posers always believe in women. And that is that women. On the VMAs. Check out those performances that I recommended to you. Because let me tell you something, they were great. And finally, as the pop culture expert, we gotta talk about the Met Gala. We gotta talk about the Met Gala. That's my number five. You know what? It's the return of the Met Gala. It's been over a year. This is a big moment. Stars are supposed to turn it out in looks. And overall, I felt a little underwhelmed. I'm not gonna lie. I think some of the looks were good.
Share with the audience who does not care about the Met Gala what exactly the theme was.
Okay. The Met Gala theme, for those of you who don't know, was American fashion in America, which leaves a lot of interpretation, so to speak. My biggest complaint, why did no one recreate mid-2000s fashion? Come on. Right? You could have done that and made it a camp moment, and it would have been amazing. So I'm just going to make a quick list. Number one, Megan Fox. Increíble. Increíble. And that red dress, she gave you a Dita Von T style moment. It was fantastic. And it was her first Met Gala. I'm loving this Megan Fox resurgence. Love that for her, especially after Hollywood blacklisted her after Transformers 2. This is honestly really good to see for her. I hope it keeps going. Keep your foot on our necks, Megan. You got this, girl. Next up, I'm going to need Josie's help here, because we're going to talk about Timothée Chalamet's look. Now, I know a lot of people didn't love this, but let's give him props for not wearing a black suit.
But it was the epitome of American fashion. He had a nice top, then he had the sweats, and then he had the chucks. What is more American than that, y'all? You guys.
American fashion.
Exactly. You guys complaining when literally you're just looking at a mirror.
Peak American fashion, truly.
Exacto. Barbie Ferreira, amazing. Billie Eilish, amazing. Lil Nas X's 3-in-1 reveal. I'd like to think the first one was an homage to Walter Mercado. Fantastic.
He was my favorite one.
Yes. Zoe Deutsch and Versace. Dios mío. Excelente servicio. And Regina King.
Oh, stunning as always.
Perfection. Hailee Steinfeld, you killed it. I couldn't even tell that was Hailee Steinfeld for a minute. I had to look in close, but she looked amazing. Normani, again, stepping on our necks. Thank you, Queen. Amazing job. Gemma Chan, who had a beautiful tribute. Great job. Elliot Page, I found out what Elliot was going for, I really liked the look.
Elliot is the only one allowed to wear a black
dress at the Met Gala. Exactly. The only one allowed.
They're the only one allowed. The rest who wore a plain black tux, go home.
Go home.
What are you doing? This is a Met Gala.
Pete Davidson, I like the message behind it. Once they explained it, it was really nice what he did. And the return of Rihanna. Por fin. I loved her look. I thought it was really cool. I had to give it some time to fully understand it, but I really love it. And Jeremy Pope's look. A lot of people didn't see it. I don't think a lot of people saw Jeremy Pope's look, but that was a look. That was cool. Loved it. Met Gala, a little underwhelming, but
yeah,
hopefully they'll fix it with part two, which is supposed to be next year. And
yes,
Josie and Gabriela, you guys were near the Met Gala.
Yes, I think that's
we went to the Met
Gala. That's the most important part. We were there. We were at the Met. Because we weren't invited, but we were there. We saw the dog that was on all the pictures. The yes. dog was the best part. But yeah.
We saw the security guards.
Yes.
Can you?
And the cars.
Can you confirm or deny if the cast of Ocean's 9 was filming their film right there and they're just doing Met Gala 2? Yes or no?
Yes.
Can confirm.
Thank God. Cinema is saved. It's over for everyone else. And now we'd like to take a moment to talk to you about our sponsor, Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast.
Here at Film Posters, we have a lot of agendas. So I'm going to add a new one to our list, and it's Paw Patrol.
Yes.
Oh my
God. 100% on board with this, Anna. Tell the audience why they need to check out this cinematic masterpiece.
This cinematic masterpiece was so much fun to watch. Yes, I was in a theater full of children with my cousin, and we had a great time watching this. I didn't care. It's cute. It's wholesome. I just really love the message that it gave out, which is overcome your fears. And I just thought it was really adorable. I have no complaints watching this movie. This is me saying, please watch Paw Patrol the movie. Next film is called Words Bubble Up Like Soda Pop, and it's a new Netflix animated film. In the film, it's about after meeting one bright sunny day, a shy boy who expresses himself through haikus and a bubbly but self-conscious girl shares a brief magical summer. I gotta say, this movie was really wholesome. Eva Barcy was striking colorful palettes, and it's just a very beautiful animation. It was such a wholesome time. It's cute. I love how it just teaches you about finding self-confidence. And it is just a really cute, wholesome love story that I think if you want to have a good time, you should definitely watch. So the next film in my list is a film that all of us watched, and it's called Candyman.
Yes.
Say his name.
Yes.
Say his name.
Yahya Abdul Mateen the second. This is an invitation. I will be the glow stick
when no one may want to break you.
Say, baby, I love you if you ain't running game. Thank you, Josie.
Say his name.
The Leo hive mind.
So I thought, first of all, Jaya can get it. Second of all,
Yahya can get it. I have been on this bandwagon for the longest time.
This is PG. Well, PG-13.
No.
Anna.
Okay, but if we gotta talk about it, that whole cast. Wow.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
The whole cast.
Coleman Domingo?
He never misses the assignment.
Never. Straight A student.
We love our king, Coleman Domingo.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that I really loved about this film is how obviously it throws you back from the original one. And I just love the whole message from comparing to the first one to this one, how, spoiler alert, it handles the theme about the beehive itself. And I just thought it was so brilliant. And yeah, it handled the social commentary really well. I really liked the horror parts on this film. It just has great direction by Nia Da Costa.
Oh, yeah.
She killed it.
She did. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. It's probably my favorite part of the movie other than the performances.
Okay, one of the things I loved what Nia Da Costa did, though, spoiler alert, is the scene in the bathroom and the shot with the mirror, the compact mirror. Yes.
Mm.
Cinema.
Yeah. Okay. So the next movie. Man, I was scared. Okay. And Normally I do not get scared by watching horror films.
No, Anna is immune to everything. If Anna gets scared, then you know that's some fucked up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When Anna says she is scared, oh, you better run.
For the hills.
Don't press play. Just don't do it.
The Empty Man came out on HBO Max. And I was really excited to watch this film because Chris Duckman hyped this up. Okay? And I made the bad decision to watch this. At night.
I remember when Anna was watching this film and she texts me like, I'm scared. And I'm like, oh, what do I need to avoid? What do I need to put on my never watch list?
It was so disturbing. And I was like alone at my room. And just a lot of creepy stuff was happening in the film. And there was like so many absence of sound in the film. It just made me uncomfortable. And you know what? I was like, I'm gonna need to finish this movie the next day. And I don't normally do that. At first, it is like a supernatural kind of thing. But half through the film, it just changes completely to like a cult or something. Which definitely the vibe of the film definitely changed. But the first half definitely was scary. I don't know, there was a lot of weird stuff going on that is definitely unsettling. And I don't know if some people are too sensitive when it comes to, you know, possession or occult. I don't think you guys can see this movie. And the thing is, this movie was gonna flop until Chris Duckman talked about it in his channel. And people literally started talking about it, and then they added on HBO Max, and it deserves the hype that people say it is, you know?
Me with Willy's Wonderland.
So, the last movie in my list is Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. It is the first installment of the Vengeance trilogy, directed by Park Chan-wook. And man, I was depressed. Okay, you cannot watch this film if you have a bad day. Please don't. Just like the title says. Every time. All of the characters are just very sympathetic, and every time you thought it just couldn't get worse, it gets worse. And of course, Song Kang-ho is in this film, and for those who don't know, he's the dad from Parasite, and like always, he does certainly
love him
assignment. And I just thought,
we loved him,
we stand him in this household. I felt really sad watching this by the end. I felt depressed. I don't know what's going to happen to me if I see now, because the other installments are Old Boy and Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, and it goes with that order with the theme of vengeance per se. And this movie was really gory, it has action, it just definitely gloomy. The cinematography, again, Park Chan-wook, he always does it right. In a sense, if you want to see a really good Korean cinema, You should definitely check this one out.
Anna's recommendations are basically, if you don't want to sleep ever again, don't watch this film. And if you're having a really bad day, don't watch this film. Are you okay, Anna? Are you okay?
We're vibing.
That's such a loaded question to ask, though.
So the first film that I have, it's actually like two films, but they're like the first one and the sequel, so I'm just gonna group them together, and that is Creep. So I haven't recommended these films for a while, and Anna saw them and she liked them and she said that I would like them. And I said, okay, so they're both on Netflix. So one day I decided, okay, I'm gonna watch Creep. So imagine my surprise when I saw that the main character is none other than Mark Duplass. Plays, well, a creep. I was scared, not gonna lie. Anna warned me. It's a scary film. At least the first one really creeped me out. And it's not that it's like it deals with the supernatural or anything. It's just that it knows when to use jump scares. And that's what's terrifying, because you feel it coming, but then they drag it out. And they drag it out until they get you when you're not expecting it. But I really liked it. I thought it was a great take on the found footage. It's not even found footage. It's just kind of documentary style. Because it basically follows this guy who answers like a Craigslist ad for someone that's gonna pay him to make a documentary about his life. A lot of the first one. And then obviously as the film goes along, you discover that this guy is like crazy and he's a serial killer. And then you have like the second one, which doesn't have as many jump scares as the first one, but the story is more interesting because it's this whole serial killer having a midlife crisis thing. And I thought it was funny. And Mark played that serial killer so well, it concerned me.
Yeah. I definitely like the first one because, mm-hmm. like you said, it gave me, again, the creepy vibes to it.
It's so creepy.
Yeah, definitely made me check my window a couple of times.
Oh, yeah, especially in the first one when he sends him mm-hmm. the package. Bruh.
Yeah, and just like you said, the jump scares were perfect.
If you want to check your window every 5 minutes to make sure someone's not out there staring at you, this is the film for you.
But if you want to watch Mark Duplass not play a creep, watch Language Lessons in theaters now. So the next film I have, I watched with Anna.
Mira.
And we were eating and we decided to watch a movie, but we wanted to watch a movie that neither of us had seen. And we also wanted to do a thirst watch of the one and only Patrick Wilson. Now, this was a challenge because turns out Anna and I have both seen a lot of his films. So we found one called Hard Candy that also stars Elliot Page. So Anna and I press play, not knowing absolutely nothing. We knew nothing about this film. And boy, oh boy, the thirst watch went wrong.
We should have read the synopsis. It is brutal, to be honest. It felt wrong. It felt really wrong. But the movie, I gotta say, Elliot Page's performance was really great, and he was so young in this movie. He was so young, and then handling this certain themes and the conversations that were happening, mm-hmm. and there is a specific scene that it was really gory. We definitely weren't expecting that. Not spoilers, because if you want to see it, this is definitely a highlight for the film.
Man, I think this film really bamboozled us in all the ways, because it leads you to one thing and then it ends up being something completely mm-hmm. different. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that was Hard Candy. I think it's a very interesting film. I definitely had not seen a film handle this topic in this way before. Anyways, moving on. The next film I'm going to talk about is Reminiscence, which I feel that no one saw. So for those of you who don't know, Reminiscence is the new Hugh Jackman film with Rebecca Ferguson and Thandie Newton. And it premiered in theaters and on HBO Max, like, the same day premiere. I wanted to see it because I thought it was a very interesting premise. And it's definitely a very original film, but boy, oh boy, it's something with a capital S. I thought the first two acts were fine, but then the third act just does something so absurd that it just couldn't. It just, I don't even know how to explain it. It just basically, you know, undid everything that was set up. Because at first I didn't think it was a bad film. I just thought it was fine. But then the ending comes and it's just like, you know what? No. So there were things that I really liked about it. I liked how when it came to the machine. So basically Hugh Jackman plays this guy who has a machine that can like relive people's memories. And so what I really loved about it is that the machine was not CGI. That they actually built that machine and they had the people inside it. Like, it was real people. It was not like CGI when the scene plays. It was all practical effect. It was not like computer, which I appreciated a lot. And I thought it looked really cool. But I just think that this movie was very messy. And it, at first you think it knew where it was going, but then by the second act, you realize that it doesn't really know where it's going. And it ends up being like very cliched. And yeah, it was very disappointing because I really wanted to like this film. And it definitely had potential, which is what was really frustrating because it had a lot of potential. And the next film I have is one of Josie's favorite films that I had never seen. And I finally watched it. And it is Uptown Girls.
Good.
That's all she has to say.
It's about time.
Yeah. Yes.
So what were your thoughts on Uptown Girls?
I loved it. I cried so much. Especially at the song at the end.
As you should.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it, but I want to watch it, so.
It's so good.
Put it on that watch list, Anna.
It's a good film, and it gets so many bad reviews on Letterboxd, and I'm like, what is wrong with y'all?
Don't understand. Do people not like Joy?
No, they don't. And I thought it was one of Brittany Murphy's like better roles.
Yeah.
But she killed it. It was amazing.
It was. We're going to go up to Coney Island and recreate the teapot scene.
As you should. Uptown Girls for the Criterion Collection. ¿Cuándo?
Honestamente.
Apparently not a lot of people, but I know why the people who love it, because it's truly a lovely film.
I mean, I get it. White people problems, but it, like at the core of it, just
exactly
the contrast between the two of them and what they have to learn from each other and the way that they do learn it and the way that they're able to be vulnerable. And just, again, it deals with abandonment. It deals with grief. It deals with how scared we are, no matter, like, it doesn't get easier as we grow up. Sometimes we even grow to fear even more as we get older. So I think it handles all of that very nicely.
Yeah, I agree. So finally, the last film I have to talk about has been making rounds at Twitter, and it is none other than the new Cinderella.
Listen, I know that everyone keeps saying the same things, like there's Ever After, there's the other Cinderella, there's
a Cinderella Story,
Cinderella, there's a Cinderella Story, there's El Enchanted, which is not along the same lines, but still, like, they imitated a lot from that movie, especially by using Somebody to Love, so let's throw it in there. We already have that. We didn't need this. Now, I will say, it wasn't as bad as I expected because I did get a lot out of it, but it was mostly things that just made me laugh that probably shouldn't have made me laugh. Like, I was memeing the film while watching it. Very Zoomer behavior right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't even know what I rated. I think I gave it a 2 and then I lowered it back down to 1.5. Like, he's all that. Because I had too much fun with it, but it wasn't because of the movie. It was because I made a good time out of it.
That tweet you made was golden.
We were laughing so hard.
the what a man should have been dedicated to Richard Madden.
Yes. As a Fifth Harmony stan, what were your thoughts on the acting debut of Camila Cabello, and who
was
did
that
it better?
Her acting debut?
Juan.
Yes, in a movie.
Juan, you know how I physically have to leave the room at the mention of Camila Cabello, so I am not the person to ask.
Okay, then let me ask a true one. Pick one or the other. Camila Cabello's acting debut or Addison Rae's?
So that's the thing. It felt along the same lines. It was very one note. She did what she could with what she was given. I think she played the role well, which is not to say, like, how do I say this? Again, it's what she was given, and I don't think there was much to contend to play exactly around with. So I think she did what she could with what she was given, which really wasn't that much. It was kind of basic. She does bring a lot of personality to it. I will give her that. I will say I think I definitely enjoyed her more than Addison Rae. Because, again, she did bring a lot of variety in terms of personality and charm to the character, while Addison Rae definitely felt, again, a lot more one note. Camila Cabello had a lot more, like, duality and a lot more dimension to the character.
Yeah, Addison felt very stiff. But Camila didn't, so I guess that's a plus. Again, the same thing. I didn't think it was as bad as I thought it was gonna be. But the best part of it was actually Billy Porter. Like Billy Porter, he was the best part. And Idina Menzel, he outsings everyone in that movie. So they have her sing the least amount of times because everyone knows she's the best singer of the entire movie.
The only thing, and I think we can close with this, is, you know, when this got released, Netflix doubled down and said, here's a Cinderella story. I would have wanted Disney to double down and said, you know what's coming back to Disney Plus? Cinderella 2015. Take that, Amazon. That would have been amazing. That's how you do petty. That's how you do a PR move. Our Madden expert would probably help us out here. Josie, what do you think of this?
Yes, I'm not going to continue to rent this film. Thank God Gabriela got me a physical copy for my birthday because I am tired. Disney Plus, bring back Cinderella 2015 now.
For the culture.
Yeah, look what happened. Amazon had to do their own Cinderella because Disney won't have their version of Cinderella on Disney Plus.
And thank you for keeping up with us for this kind of long episode. But yeah, that's actually all for today's episode. So we'd like to thank you for listening and to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at FunPosers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Also, please make sure to give some love to our L article. Please, please, please. We are very happy. We are very touched. And we are equally parts proud and humbled. So it just means a lot, the support that has been given as well for the article and for us. So thank you so much. And thank you for listening. And thank you for putting up with our chaos. Where can they find you, posers?
So you can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at Gabby Cristina.
You can find me on Twitter as Anna_Sophia53 and on Letterboxd as Anna_Sophia.
You can find me ranting and raving on Twitter at Leading Mohicans. You can find me on Letterboxd at Leading Mohicans and on Instagram on j.mohica18.
And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd as at the Josie Marie. Again, thank you for listening. And remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.